2-1-0, and liftoff, the final liftoff of Atlantis on the shoulders of the space shuttle.
It is hard to believe, but it's been nearly a decade since an astronaut was launched into space from American soil. Yesterday at Cape Canaveral, Florida, the company SpaceX and NASA tried to end that streak on board the Falcon 9, but 16 minutes before liftoff...
Dragon SpaceX, unfortunately, we are not going to launch today. You are go for 5.100 launch scrub.
Bad weather scrapped the mission. The mission was supposed to be the culmination of a decade-long partnership between NASA and a private company. Margaret Weidekamp is the head of the Space History Department at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in Washington. Thanks for being with us. So yesterday was postponed. Weather happens. What do you make, though, of this shift to privately owned spacecrafts?
It is a really exciting new way of ordering the relationship between NASA and private companies. Now, we know that the Apollo missions, those spacecraft were built by private companies. This is a new kind of relationship where NASA is not just asking for a private company to make it, but to actually fly it.
Are there problems with decentralizing it that way?
I think that what they are looking forward to is being able to have different companies approaching the same kind of problem. And so the hope really is that by having SpaceX have its solution and Boeing have its solution, then you have an increased number of ways that you can support the International Space Station, which is still being supported by international partners.
So we heard the last launch of Atlantis a moment ago, and since 2011, U.S. astronauts have been hitching rides to space with Russia. Most agree it's been a pretty fruitful partnership between the two superpowers. So how do you see the shift to private American companies affecting the U.S.-Russian space collaboration?
Being able to add private companies providing not only cargo but crew service to the International Space Station removes at some level the over-reliance on the vagaries of geopolitics. And it also then, I think NASA is hoping, opens up their options in terms of turning their attention to exploration going back to the moon, perhaps onto Mars, and also then being able to put the focus on international collaborations in terms of planetary science and astronomy.
So finally, this historic flight, it's slated to happen in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. What special precautions were taken to ensure the safety and health of the astronauts and crews? And do you think they should have delayed for a few months or even a year to lessen the odds that the virus would not end up on board the International Space Station?
I know that they have stepped up the crew isolation in anticipation of the launch, and additional precautions were taken about trying to make sure that there's no transmission of the virus to the International Space Station. I think the biggest loss is how many of us would have certainly made a trip to Florida to make sure that we were able to see this historic launch in person. We'll instead be kind of collectively having the experience of watching it online or on television.
Margaret Weidekamp, the head of the Space History Department at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in Washington, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.